disco that he used to pave the way down the long black stretches of a dark highway. Ray bought his future with a pound of lead. Then he robbed a liquor store and left the clerk for dead. That kid should have put the money in a sack, but he didn't, and now there ain't no turning back. He's a desperate rider, he's a Jesse James. The best thing he can hope for is a household name. There ain't nobody that a man can trust when all his headlines read notorious.
Well, that boy may be notorious, but this boy is terrible. Terrible Tommy, right here in a bunker on a Freya's Day. And since we didn't get any requests for songs that I was aware of, I'm putting a couple of mine in there, some of my favorite songs. So anyhow, we'll have another one at the end of the show. Yeah, we're at P.O. Box 401 as usual, hiding in that little box. You send your donations for the show and other donations, and we'll take care of it. Yeah, I want to thank our friend from Great Britain, one of our subscribers, for sending me a few books, the Hardy books. People from the old days are going to remember the Hardy books, Hardy book adventures and stuff like that. And he sent me some really nice creator stickers, too. So I think what we're going to do is see if he wants to trade books and stickers, and I'll send him the show. Sounds like a pretty good deal to me. Yeah, it's the 5th of June, 2015, Freya's Day, and Nice day, but we're supposed to get some rain this afternoon. I hope not, because tonight in the town where I live near Warsaw, they have Friday Nighters. That's where everybody comes out on the street and walks around. They got all kinds of booths pushing everything. That's where I go around to the Christian booths and pull her chain. I always have fun going up to the Christian booths and pulling her chain. Anyhow, there's going to be a couple of real good bands down there. Two bands tonight, and it's free of charge. Terrible Tommy likes that free of charge stuff, I'll tell you, man. Don't you get tired of all our enemies changing word meanings around? Like diverse, saying diversity. Diverse is different. Diverse is separate. It's not inclusive. It's not supposed to have anything to do with race mixing and so-called cultural mixing. But they keep turning things around. Look at gay. They have no natural right to call homosexuals gay. It's just a propaganda stunt to make it more acceptable. I wish they'd fight fair. That's not fighting fair. Of course, I guess we don't have to fight fair either. But anyhow, I can find plenty of un-gay homosexuals around. They fight like cats and dogs, man. Yeah, they do. And when they get married, they're going to fight even more. And they call themselves gay. Well, I don't like it. It ruins a lot of good songs that we used to have that had gay in the title, which meant happiness. Well, you can't attach the term gay to homosexuals any more than you can attach gay to heterosexuals. Anyone can be gay or not gay. But they do that all the time. These things are offensive to me. But it's okay if you're offended, okay if I'm offended, but it's never okay if your enemy is offended. Isn't that interesting? How about everybody's got a community but us? If they want to include us with all the jerks and stupid people of the white race and say that's our white community, that's not my white community. You know, you got a gay community, you got a, what the hell they call that, TPFG or something? The other kind of strange ones. They got a community. The Negroes sure have a community because they don't act very community. I'll tell you that, the way they gun each other down. I think there's been about 100 gunned down this week. It ends up being 14, 15, there may be 20 or 30 kill each other in one night. Or one weekend. So that doesn't seem to be much of a community if you ask me. But when we say we want our community, our white separatist community, all hell breaks loose. Isn't that strange? Isn't that interesting? And it's quite offensive because if the progressives and liberals and all these other, even conservatives, were going to be honest, they'd say, well, that's a interesting point of view, and it should be respected, like territorial imperative or the right to self-determination. Well, that doesn't mean you, whitey, because they lump us in with all the elitist whites, all the ruling class whites, and we're no part of them. They're on their own playground, and they don't want us to be part of them. That's why they like to send us all to war to get our ass shot off. And what's so terrible about it, so many white working people, young people, get involved with that and go away and get to fight and occupy other countries and suppress other people and get their ass blown off, of which they have no excuse for going in the first place. And I think even worse, to be damned to hell, is these parents that encourage young people to join the military. Now, I know what a lot of it is, because the lack of jobs that we have shipped over to China and so forth, and they've made billions and trillions of dollars off of it, and our people have a problem getting a job. So I know that most of it is joining up to have a job, and maybe they promise you to finance you in college or university or something like that, which you shouldn't have to do that. that shouldn't be part of the deal. Now, when I was 18, I decided I wanted to see the world. And I think a lot of people are like that, a lot of young people. So I went down to the Army recruiter and talked to him, and he said, yeah, we can guarantee you this school for 36 months. And it was microwave technician. I first went in for television technician, which I wanted to get into television because I already was into television at one end or the other. So anyhow, they guaranteed me the school and guaranteed me several things, and so I took them up on it. So I felt I got a pretty good deal out of the deal. I didn't have to go to infantry training, combat training at all. I went down to Fort Lost in the Woods, Missouri. That's Fort Leonard Wood. Of course, that's where I had my first experience with more than a couple of Negroes, because Leonard Woods was full of Negroes from the South Chicago. And I'm telling you, that was culture shock. It was really culture shock. You go into the PX, they're in there yelling and screaming and flapping their gums, and they get around the jukebox where nobody else could get in. They would do all kinds of offensive things. They gather around on the steps of your billets, your building where you slept, and they'd start singing half the night with their brand of music, and you just pretty much had to take it, unless you had a good officer or first sergeant, and we did, who took care of a lot of that stuff. You had one of those. If you had an officer like that, usually an old World War II Mustanger, he took care of things for you. So then I had requested to go to Germany, and that's where they sent me after school. So I spent several months, about a year or so. Well, no, a couple of years over there in Germany in a real nice place up on top of a mountain where I got special pay allowances for being away from the base camp. It was like a civilian job. And we had a German cook, two ladies that drove them up from the village down below, and they cooked for us in our kitchen every day. And there was only about eight or nine of us there. They shipped in our movies to us and everything. It was really nice. One time I got restricted to base because I had almost got in a fight with some tinker-ass, not a first sergeant, just a one-striper sergeant. And so they said, you're restricted to base. Well, base was a compound about 100 feet long and 100 feet wide with chain-link fence and barbed wire around it. I said, okay. But even then, I didn't go by the rules. I climbed over this 8-foot fence at night and went down to the nearest bar. There happened to be a bar down in the woods about half a mile from us, and got my drinks and so forth. So restricting me to the base was sort of a joke anyhow. But anyhow, I traveled all over Europe. I went to Spain, I went to Britain, went to France, of course Germany. I spent quite a bit of time in Holland. I spent time in Denmark. And so I don't have anything to complain about it. But I was never really in any danger of being in a hot war like Vietnam. Vietnam was on the horizon just starting out with a few advisors. It's a good thing I got in and got out when I did. However, I didn't have the training to do what they wanted me to do, go over there and kill all the Vietnamese. So anyhow, that was my career. No combat, none of that stuff. If you can get something like that, it's okay in the military, but you don't know what you're going to get. And if you don't have any previous education in some kind of trade that you can fit into some school in the military, you better stay out. You better stay out, because If they grab you and put you into training, military training, I mean really heavy type training, you're going to probably get your ass blown off, or at least you're going to come back with PTSD, and you may end up killing your family or something, like hundreds of these guys are doing. Now, I think it was last week, I think I recommended to you people, all you people that want to go to university, I may be wrong about this, but I think it'd be interesting to try. How about going to university, sign all their papers that you're going to owe them all this money, just don't make any difference. Sign all those papers and everything. Get your education, and then since you've got a good education in an American university or college, you take that sheepskin and go to another country. And they're happy to get people with qualifications like that. And don't pay the bastards all that money back. Just forget it. You don't have to do that. You might have to stay over there for a while in some other country, but there's a lot of countries that are pretty nice around the world that are screaming to get a good American technicians and engineers and so forth. So you can outfox them that way. And seems like a good idea to me. Or if you've got this big educational debt and you have nothing they can seize, forget it. I mean, just don't pay them. And if you've got, if you can do something where you don't have to work for a corporation or somebody else paying you a paycheck, well, you can go on for decades without paying them anything on that educational debt. See, the way they get you is if you're working for somebody else. If you're working for a corporation, even working for the government or working, no matter who you're working for, they can come after you and take money away from you. But if you don't keep a lot of cash in the bank and you stay away from somebody else paying you a check and have your own little business and mostly using cash, hell, they can't get your money. Well, I learned that. I learned all the tricks in the book after the Morris Dees thing up in Portland, Oregon. Believe me, I'm not going to even tell you all the ins and outs of that stuff. But like the judge said up there, he said, well, you can't get blood out of a turnip. And he sort of smiled and looked at me. And if you've got anything that's really pretty valuable, like a house or maybe even a new car, always drive an older car so that it's not worth that much. But if you've got a house or something like that that's pretty valuable, well, get it. Always have it in someone else's name that you can trust. Now, I know that's a little difficult to find, but obviously there's some people can be trusted. And especially if you say, if you screw me out of this, I'm coming after you. But don't have anything in your name, anything important, you know. They can come after me all day long. They're not going to get anything. Because I learned that from the Catholic Church. They took a vow of poverty. So, terrible Tommy, after the Portland debacle, I took a vow of poverty. And I've been happier ever since. In fact, in the long run, that Portland thing may have been the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I never realized how cool it was to fly under the radar. And Morris Dees was so cocksure that I wouldn't do what I did, he couldn't believe it. Because the day after I got home from Portland, and my house was gone, my business was gone, all that, I went for welfare. I signed up for welfare and received welfare and was damn proud to get it. And I thanked my citizens. I told them if those people didn't want me to file for welfare, they shouldn't have screwed me in Portland. Because when you screw me, I'm going to screw you back. And what about equality? Everybody's talking about equality, but nobody's really that stupid to believe that everybody's equal. Or that anybody's equal, because nature didn't build us that way. Not only are individuals not equal, never going to be equal, but under the law. They say you're equal under the law. That's bullshit. If you got a high-priced attorney, you get a better shake if you got a cheap attorney. Rich guys hardly ever go to prison. Poor people go all the time. The prisons are full of equal Negroes. They said, I'm equal. Hey, you can't put me in here. I was equal. I'd be equal, man. I was equal to that white man over there in that Lexus. Oh, sorry, Fred. Sorry, Rastus. Sorry to disappoint you about being equal. That is the biggest scam that's ever been pulled on anybody. And of course, they even put it in our Declaration of Independence, which was shows you how short-sighted they were, because all that was put together, the Declaration of Independence, was to get arms and money and troops from the French to help us with the revolution. There isn't one guy in 100 that knows that. It was all designed to make the French happy because they were in the throes of their liberty, fraternity, and all that kind of crap. They were going nuts over there in their sort of a communard situation. And so they said, oh, here's a country that wants to go crazy like we're going crazy. So, and look at what they wrote. All men's be created equal and all that stuff. Which I know Thomas Jefferson and the boys, just reading for what they wrote, had a tongue in their cheek, and Madison and all those guys had a tongue in their cheek all the time they were reading and writing that Declaration of Independence, because not one of them believed it. They couldn't believe it, because the United States, as it was formed as a white man's country. It was right in there, all the way up, maybe, what was it, about 100 years it was written in the Constitution. It's a white man's land. It was designed to be a white man's land. So whoever goes against that and tries to change it is our bitter enemy. And we must change that no matter what. Because if the North America can't remain a white man's land, it won't remain a land at all. It'll sink back into the deprivation of nature's curse. Because nature doesn't like to be fooled. And when you try to change evolution, you're always going to lose. You think we're losing now? Yeah, we are losing now, but we're not going to lose forever. Because nature won't tolerate it. This horrible thing in Washington can't last. Or like, what's his name, said to his grandchild. Trying to remember that. Anyhow, he said that his grandfather said to him when he was a little kid walking through Washington, he said, one of these days, this will all be rubble. And I believe it. I believe it. When it collapses, it'll collapse really hard. The Capitol should have never been in Washington, D.C. anyhow. If you're going to have a national capital, it should be in the middle of the country. Yep. It should have been, but I don't believe in the national capital situation. I don't believe in a federal government. I believe in the original formation of this area of separate and individual states. And when they say, well, you wouldn't have any power if you had that, well, hell, they all combined together to fight the British, and they won. There was no federal government when they fought the British. Even on a coin that was designed by Ben Franklin, it said something like, we're all separate states, but we're all together. And that worked out quite well. It would work quite well going into the future, no matter what these assholes tell you. You know, they say, well, what the hell? The British would have taken us over, or the French, or the Spanish, or blah, blah, blah. Well, do you realize how much land we have here in North America? That we could, as a guerrilla force, could always retreat and come back and retreat and come back, and similar to the Indians. And probably with the Indians, they didn't keep fighting. If the Mongols had kept fighting, they could have probably won if they'd employed the kind of guerrilla tactics on a larger scale, and if they could have got along with each other. The problem with the Mongols were they'd rather fight each other than fight the white man. They're still like that today. The Mongol tribes discriminate against each other like mad. One tribe doesn't, the Cherokee that used to be down there in Georgia, a hell of a lot of them are white. And they had no connection whatsoever with the Mongols. So when they were forced out west, that became a big problem, because they were pushing these quite a bit of white Indians, they're Mongols, they weren't Mongols, they were white people, that had a Cherokee nation in Georgia, had their own constitution, had their own police, had their own plantations where they had all kinds of slaves. The great chief of the Cherokee had a Scotch castle built in Georgia, is what I'm told, a replica of something from out of Europe. So anyhow, but as they pushed them west, then there was what happens to them is what happens to us. Due to forced or combat, they integrated and screwed each other and ended up a mess. However, I must say that most of the heads of the Mongol nations in the United States, the guys running the show, are white or pretty white. I see these blonde-haired, blue-eyed Mongol Indians all the time speaking for the Indians. I just don't understand that. And then the other term that pisses me off, and I tell you all the time, you probably get tired of hearing it, and that's rights. What do you mean rights? It used to, way back, it meant some kind of right that come from the big daddy in the sky, you know, one of those imaginary gods up there. But people begin to learn that that was not the case, or at least the smart ones figured that out. So then they said, well, you got the right under the king, because the king or the pope are getting their messages right from God, of which was totally phony and was not true at all. And so they were defrauding the population just so they could keep them under control and milk them for everything they got. So we know rights are bullshit. There's nothing you can have that I can't take away from you, or nothing I have that you can't take away from me if you're stronger than I am. You can't. There's no way. So everybody keeps talking about rights, and whenever the government says they're going to give you a right, they're a lying bunch of assholes. They can't give you a right, and they don't. They give you a privilege. And as long as you toe the mark and go by what they believe, or what they want to do to keep you hemmed in and keep you suppressed, you're going to be okay. But if you step outside and do what is natural under nature's law, they're going to take your privilege away, and they may take your life away. The prisons are full with people who are right in what they think, but they didn't have a right. They had a privilege, and, you know, they've got this sovereign citizen bunch running around, and they keep trying to argue the Constitution into court. And I've known about them for 25, 30 years, and I've seen some of the crazy shit they get into, thinking they can go into court and argue the Constitution. Well, they don't realize the Constitution is technically dead as a doornail to the working class. It works out pretty well for the rich and the powerful, but it don't work out very well for the working class. So it's I used to tell those people, I mean, you know, you go in there and start arguing a case about you don't have to have license plates. I said, they may let you go on that because they just consider you a raving maniac and look the other way. But when you start arguing something like land rights or some of that shit they tried to pull by filing suits against people and taking their property and all that, mayors and stuff, they all got slammed in this can because there are no rights. There are only privileges, and the Supreme Court and all the federal courts in the country are there to make sure that that's the way it goes. It's a fixed game, boys and girls. It's a fixed game. You gotta understand that if you don't understand anything else. If you look at it in anything but a con game or a big game, and it's like Las Vegas, the house always wins. So you gotta stay away from the house. You know, you don't go from one casino on one side of the street where you lost your ass over to the other side of the street to another casino and think you're gonna win. Because you're going to lose in both places because all the houses always win. Oh, they might let one or two make some money, but... So anyhow, as long as you understand that, you can't win by playing the government's game. And for now, you've got to stay out of the way of the government as much as you can. Because if they drag you into a court, you're never going to win. and we've got some pretty good guys in prison now that are proving that point, that are, would have been valuable to the movement, but through either skullduggery or whatever, they ended up in federal prison, and now they're doing years and decades for virtually nothing, because you have to sidestep the system. If you can hurt the system without risking anything, well, that's okay. There's many ways of hurting the system. The one thing that hurts the system is that you don't believe in it, you don't go along with it, and you tell everybody else don't go along with it. Yeah, that's the way you operate, baby. Mother Nature will love you. Just like even in local towns, small towns like the one I'm next to, why, hell, they've got a clique of guys running that town that you couldn't break it if with Sherman's army. And I realized that, hell, I was more politically viable in California than I am in these small towns here in Indiana, because the political party that's in charge, which is the Republican Party, they control everything. They got their good old boys and their boys that play golf every day and all the attorneys, and they all eat and have these big get-togethers and tell how wonderful they all are and everything else. And forget it. Just sidestep them. Sidestep them. Because if you try to play their game, they're going to smash you. They're going to smash you. And like I said before, when I came to town here and I got two tickets within 2 months, and I hadn't had a ticket since 1963, so I went in to argue it, and they were almost laughing. I mean, you know, not at first. But I tried to, everything I tried to put up to the judge, he wasn't taking it, and the DA was over there sort of snickering, and halfway through the proceedings, I said, well, okay, boys, I get the message. I see the way it's run. We won't play it that way again. I was foolish for trying to play your game, but I'm in the wrong gambling casino, and walked out. And I sure as hell wasn't like some lunatic white people who stand there all afternoon and argue about the Constitution. And I got my rights, and you can't do this to me. It reminds me of that deal from the movie. Shit, what was the name of that movie? Well, anyhow, the judge has got this guy up in front of him, and he says, I'm sentencing you to 40 years. And the guy's screaming and crying. He said, but judge, I can't do 40 years. And the judge says, well, do as many as you can. That's Vinny, my cousin Vinny. That's a great movie if you've never seen it. It's funny as hell. Oh, yeah, I forgot to remind you. The one guy that just jumped into the presidential race that doesn't have a chance in hell, I think he was from Maryland, and I didn't write down his name, but he was the only senator or congressman, I don't remember which, in the whole federal government that voted against the attack on Iraq under George Bush. Now, that guy needs a hell of a lot of respect. He was a Republican. He changed over in the last few years to a Democrat. But I don't know how good he is on anything else, and he got poo-pooed right out of the gate by all these other Republicans and Democrats. But he was the only guy that voted against the occupation of Iraq. Got to give that guy a hell of a lot of respect. And if I was a voting kind, I'd probably vote for him, even though he don't have a chance in hell. Oh, yeah, you notice this Graham Cracker from down North Carolina is running for president? He's a worthless son of a bitch of any of them, and he's a warmonger. He talks about how, boy, did you hear what he said about going to war? We got to go to war. We got to go to war. He's as bad as John McCain. Well, you know, he never served any, he was never on the front or battles of any kind. He was working in an office. I forget what his title was. He was the military, but he never saw combat. That's the way with most of these guys, these pussycats, these chicken hawks. They say they served their country well, you know, in some office behind the lines, but they're always the one that want to go to war. Well, why don't you go on over there, Mr. Graham Cracker, and see what you can do with those ISIS people. They'd like to talk to you, because they would chop your fucking head off in 5 seconds, and I certainly wouldn't cry about it. Not at all. I wouldn't even lose any sleep. Hey, Mike, you crazy progressive, what's on your mind today?
USA Patriot Act.
USA Freedom Act.
USA Freedom Act. Jesus. Freedom is slavery, war is peace. Now, getting back to this debate, the so-called liberals, the way Huffington Post puts it, lawmakers on the other side of the debate, including a handful of senators who have spoken out against NSA overreach for years, still won't praise Snowden either. They can't do that. Folks back home would cut their goddamn hearts out, wouldn't they? Huh? But they will acknowledge that he drew public attention to their fight, making it easier for them to talk about what they had promised to keep secret. Dick Durbin of Illinois, Senator Dick Durbin, he said, quote, "I had been briefed on virtually all of it. Our speeches were almost humorous because I kept referring to things I knew, but I couldn't say." Now, he voted for the Patriot Act extension in 2005, but he has opposed subsequent reauthorizations. Wonder why. Wonder why. He continued, he said, quote, "I couldn't speak about it publicly. I just made general and vague references to the issue. It's tough to carry the debate with your hands tied," end quote. It's also tough, Senator Durbin, when you are a fascist Democrat. Well, your hands tied? What the hell are you talking about? Senator Durbin, why didn't you just stand in the well of the Senate and say you weren't going to participate in the abrogation of civil liberties in this country any longer? I hate these people. I mean, I really do. Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, quote, "We knew well before the Snowden disclosures what was going on. I began this battle to eliminate bulk phone record collection back in 2006. And at the beginning, I could have fought it from a phone booth. There were just a handful of us," end quote. Well, Senator Ron Wyden, why didn't you go public? What were you afraid of? You're from Oregon. People in Oregon would have applauded you. Democrats, my ass. 6 months into his first term in office, according to Huffington Post, Senator Chris Coons, Democrat of Delaware, made an unpopular vote against the 2011 Patriot Act extension, due in part to information he was given in closed-door meetings on the bulk metadata collection program. Coons wasn't a member of the Intelligence Committee when he voted against the 2011, 4 years ago, extension. But he nevertheless had access to information about secret programs that he couldn't discuss publicly. Quote, "It was hard for me to explain on May of 2011 my vote against the Patriot Act because some of the concerns I had were rooted in classified briefings," end quote. Classified briefings. What was classified? The fact that the American public, and I'm not using that term in a narrow sense. I mean broadly, the American public no longer had privacy. Now, if that's classified, And these senators and representatives choose not to talk about it because, oh, it's classified, then what the hell are you doing in Washington? What are you doing as a representative of the people? Don't laugh. Don't laugh. Because we know they're not representatives of the people. But if they were truly representatives of the people, why would they get briefings in, oh, that's right, the terrorists, my... the terrorists know everything. The terrorists know all about us. They know every time Obama farts. Well, we couldn't talk about it because it was classified. You couldn't talk about the fact that you were being given information that categorically demonstrated the American public were being spied on by every single intelligence agency in the country. And that data was being stored and collected, it was being shared and cross-referenced, not because of some suspicious activity on the part of somebody. And how well did it work out? Were you able to stop the Boston bombers? No. Who were you able... Oh, yes, I know. There were all kinds of intercessions based on all that metadata, right? You liars. You rotten liars. Ed Snowden changed everything, didn't he? Dick Durbin put it this way, quote, "Of course Snowden violated his oath and endangered innocent lives of the people who were providing the United States with information. That is a lie. That is a Dick Durbin lie. What Snowden was talking about was what our intelligence agencies were doing. He wasn't disclosing information about foreign assets. Jesus. Durbin went on, and that is the important starting point. Really. You're going to start there, Dick? You're going to start with a lie. Okay. He went on, but the fact is, some of his disclosures led to a reassessment of our intelligence operations. So in that respect, if there was anything positive that came out of his decision in violation of his oath, it would be a review of what we've done in the past. Have you ever heard such weasel words in your life? I mean, the Democrats in Congress are look up the word weasel in the dictionary and you'll find them. You'll find pictures of Democrats. Look up fascists in the dictionary, you'll find pictures of Republicans. But Democrats are enablers. You know, they bitch and complain and cry and weep and whine about, oh, well, the Congress has done nothing. Oh, well, we can't get anything done. That's because you're a bunch of spineless, cowardly bastards. Every single Democrat, with one or two exceptions, in the House and the Senate is a coward. Right down to the bottom of his or her feet. An absolute coward. So, when they claim to represent the American people, when they claim to be, you know, lawmakers, and they go into these private sessions for briefings from these fascists who run the security agencies, and they get this information that's like, it's OMG stuff. Oh my God, you're doing that? And like Durbin and the rest of them say, well, you know, it was difficult for me to stand there and debate renewal of USA Patriot Act because I really knew what was going on. Then why didn't you say what was going on? Oh, couldn't. It's classified. But you're a representative of the people. These were crimes against the people. You're a representative of the people. What do you mean you couldn't? See? You see where we are? Civil liberties advocates have long argued that necessity... or have argued the necessity of not legality of Snowden's actions are striking a triumphant tone. Jamil Jaffer, deputy legal director of the ACLU, said this, quote, "This debate we're having right now is kind of a vindication of Snowden and an indication of how dramatically the political landscape has shifted over the last couple of years. We're now in a very different place than we were 2 years ago." Mr. ACLU spokesperson, I totally disagree with you. We'll be right back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Progressive Mike, but you use a lot kinder terms more than I do against these bastards, these assholes in Washington. They're all criminals, homicidal maniacs, stupid. All they're interested in is their money and the corporations that fund their next election. If you could get them all in one room, what would you think of doing if you had a sharp-bladed knife? Well, you surely might think about it, huh? I think something better would be like the rising in the French Revolution, maybe not over the same reasons, but partially about the same reasons. They had their elitists at the top, and the people were starving to death. A lot of right-wingers don't realize what the people were experiencing under the king and the queen. And the rich kept getting richer, richer and richer, and the peasants kept getting poorer and poorer, so they were ripe to be led by someone, even if they were bad, to revolt and cut the heads off. And sooner or later, it happens in every kind of situation like that. The people sooner or later rise up, and then people later cry, oh, that was horrible what they did. You know, the United States is invading and occupying countries all over the Middle East, so they really create the Taliban, they create Al-Qaeda, and finally they create ISIS, and so ISIS cuts some heads off. Oh, that's terrible. That's inhuman. But yet, who created it? Who created it? It was created in the Pentagon in the United States of America. Well, I see the false flag right wing is at it again. A lot of innocent people, but they're being led by idiots to do the wrong thing. With a heavy police presence standing between them, and that's something I've never supported, having the police protection. In fact, I've told the police many times to go home. We'll handle it. One time we were being attacked up in Oxnard, California, and we were inside a community hall, and the Progressive Labor Party were trying to break down the walls and get in, and we were successfully fighting them off. And some cop came in to try to set something up to get us out in a bus or something. And we told him, hey, why don't you just go home, leave us your gun, and we'll take care of it. But the whole idea of being protected by the police just to have a demonstration sticks in my craw. Because the police are definitely, in that situation, not our friend. Oh, we're just going to stop violence. No, I know what you're there for. Okay, what did I say? Their supporters confronted defenders of a Phoenix mosque Friday night over so-called freedom of speech rally round. Featured a draw Muhammad contest. Well, look, if they got a Muhammad mosque there, where were all these people when they were building the mosque? Where were all you people when they were coming into the country, when they come into the airports and fly into the community? Where were you way back then? Or where were you when shouldn't have been in Iraq and we stirred up, our government stirred up all this shit in the first place, which caused so many of these people to come here? Oh, we didn't think of that. Thrown together by former Marine John Ritzheimer, and that, of course, a lot of guys who say they're Marines and want to take charge don't know shit or shinola. They may have been strong soldiers, but who's this Marine John Ritzheimer? I don't know. The event was reportedly in response to the recent attack in Texas where two armed terrorists with ties to ISIS attempted jihad. The protest comes a week after the two men were killed by police after they attacked a similar event in Garland. Well, the police did their job there. I mean, what are you demonstrating about? What the hell are you demonstrating about? Just a minute here. I want to read some more of this. I got to move something over here. Sorry, boys and girls. Yeah, okay. On the event Facebook, Ritzheimer wrote, "This Islamic Community Center is a known place that the two terrorists frequented." When you use that term terrorist, you're falling right into line with what the government wants you to think. It's always a war on terrorism. It's always going to be. It'll last forever. You can't defeat something as ambiguous as that. People are also encouraged to utilize their Second Amendment right at this event, just in case our First Amendment comes under the much-anticipated attack. What are you going to do, shoot the cops? You know, the right wing never changes because they're always the same kind of leadership. They only react. They're reactionaries. There's a lot of ways that you can accomplish things, but they don't ever seem to be able to figure it out. Whoops, let me see where I'm at here. What else? Well, I guess that's about it. They show a bunch of pictures of bearded, bald-headed guys with sunglasses screaming and yelling. You'll never get support of anybody in the general public that aren't cowards themselves. And they show pictures of guys and right-wingers down there with AK-47s and stuff on their back. Well, what happens when these break out into a shootout? There are going to be a lot of guys running their ass off to get out of there if they can at all. Or the cops will shoot them down. They just don't get it. That is not the way it's done. And it's not the time it's done. The time will come. Don't worry about it. But playing false flag right wing games is not going to get you anywhere because, number one, nobody believes you. You're not going to take all those guns you carried down there in Phoenix and shoot it out with the cops and the commies or whoever they are. You're not going to do that. So if something happens, you're going to get shot down. Like I say, most of the Muslims are here because they fled their countries to get out of there. And the United States State Department, if you got an axe to grind, it's the United States State Department is bringing these people in by the thousands from all over the world. And, of course, they're so-called terrorists, but the criminals among them. They let criminals in like mad to get into white slavery and everything else, but you only want to talk about so-called terrorists, and then what do you mean, terrorist? Well, I don't know what the government says. Terrorist is a terrorist. Well, tell me what a terrorist is. Is a terrorist a freedom fighter? Is a guerrilla fighter? Is he what, you know? But they don't stop the criminals. These criminals come in from these foreign countries and they buy big houses in the city, in the Hamptons, Beverly Hills, all over the place. They make a lot of money off arms sales and all that kind of stuff. Build $500 million houses. And you're going to go down there and roll around in the street over the church they built. Oh, it's ridiculous. Would the right wing just go away for a change? Just take a vacation, please? And all your so-called leaders and your chat boards and all that? God. It's enough to gag a maggot. You remember when the Chinese called us 30 years ago, they called America the paper tiger? Well, that's what it is. They were right. There's a lot of these people posture like this outfit on Twitter. The users in Phoenix commented on the event that many felt was needlessly provocative, pointing out that Ritzheimer wears and sells T-shirts reading Fuck Islam by using the hashtag Not My America, which drew tweets from both sides of the controversy. See, this is the way they do. They got you going. You know, you get out of the street and the pro race mixing, get out in the street, and you could all kill each other off and you wouldn't change anything. Except to allow the system, gives them an excuse to put down more laws against your freedom of speech and so forth. They like it. They like it when the right wing gets out there and shows their ass and the left wing get out there and show their ass, and hopefully they'll have a bunch of killings. And then the government could come in and say, well, it's because we had all these killings, man. We got to have some more laws and clamp down on this shit. Hey, Max Geiser, what the hell you got on your mind, baby? Come on, do it. Yeah. The views and opinions expressed.
Welcome to the Geiser Report. I'm Max Geiser. Fake it till you make it, so the old saying goes. But at this point, Western economies have been faking it so long, we have no idea even what making it looks like. Isn't that right, Stacey Herbert? Please talk to me.
Yeah, we're going to go over some headlines of this clash between all our faking it and then the real world clashing with it. I like to think of it as trickle-down Potemkinism. So
what?
You know, the Potemkin village.
The Potemkin village! Trickle-down!
Yes, yes, it's trickling down, and the house is falling on us. It's a real house falling on us, and the first headline is a tweet from Rupert Murdoch, actually.
Darth Vader?
And he speaks about the faking it of quantitative easing, of course, which is faking banking, liquidity, money flows, and wealth creation. And he says vast sums printed inflate all asset values but leave wages, productivity low, with record youth unemployment, critical problem in U.S. and EU.
Well, I mean, he points out something that we've said on the show a lot of times, that this money printing, it's like an irrigation project where the money, the water doesn't go to where it's needed, that is to say, wages. And he points out very succinctly in one tweet, the problem in a tweet, that there's a lot of money printing, but it left wages behind. That's a key part of this whole story that Cameron never mentions, or that Barack Obama never mentions, but Rupert Murdoch, of course, being a shrewd guy, he picked up on it.
Our economies are these bouncy castles of property market, which is like a whole going up in the air. And you always hear about actually real people being blown away in one of these bouncy castles rolling down the hill.
I've never heard of people being rolling down the hill in a bouncy castle. Blown away into sea. There he goes. What are we going to do? There's a bouncy castle. It's going out to sea. Oh, my God. He's lost forever.
Well, one economy that is, you know, had been faking it for so long and is now hitting reality is, of course, Greece. And here's a tweet from Reuters, Jamie. And he says, default capital controls, euro referendum, new elections, all now real possibilities for Greece, says Goldman.
Well, people are beginning to understand that Greece is not an economic problem at all. It's a political problem. And that Germany wants to run the EU, as we've been saying all along. They have the imperial gene that doesn't seem to quit. This is now going to be the Fourth Reich attempt.
But actually, they've been faking it, and they've actually made it. So they've been faking that they're all kind and good since 1945, that we don't want to be an empire. And they actually made an empire by faking it that they didn't want one.
Creation of the euro was a German project to hide the fact that East and West were reunifying. Even Margaret Thatcher warned against this. Now, but politically speaking, in Athens, what they're beginning to understand that in Greece is that Germany is using Greece as an example that if you try to leave this monetary union that benefits us by keeping the euro cheap for our exports and gives us a chance to federalize all of Europe and run that out of Frankfurt, then you will be crushed. The tanks of monetary exploitation are rolling.
Reuters, Jamie mentioned capital controls, but obviously it's far too late. This headline is from Ms. Shedlock at Global Economic Analysis, and he says, April, Greek capital flight, 5 billion euros. Eurozone liabilities hit 115 billion euros. So since June of 2014, Greek banks shed about 70 billion euros in deposits, an amount roughly equal to Greek private GDP. So GDP in total is 180 billion euros. They've already withdrawn 70 billion euros in the past year. That's not counting May, when the outflow has accelerated. So it's a little bit too late to introduce capital controls when there's only the few dregs of anybody left behind.
Well, the head of the Syriza party told the Germans and the other members of the Troika to read For Whom the Bell Tolls, classic from Ernest Hemingway, published, I believe, in 1940, talking about civil war and that nobody wins. In other words, they understand what's going on, but they're willing to stand up for their country. So there is this financial war going on in Europe right now. It's not about tweaking monetary policy, or we just need to add more bonds or a greater relief fund or recapitalize a couple of banks. No, there's a frickin' war going on, and Germany is doing what it needs to do to completely federalize and run Europe.
Across Europe, the unemployed have been unemployed, 52% of them have been unemployed for over a year. In some countries like Greece, it's something like 75%. So basically, once you're unemployed, you're never getting a job. So in comes a new fake it till you make it concept. In Europe, fake jobs can have real benefits. So they look at a company called Candelia, and this is out of Lille, France. and their purveyor of sleek office furniture. Well, Sabine de Bizet, working in the accounting department, leaned into her computer and scanned a row of numbers. Candelia was doing well. Its revenue that week was outpacing expenses, even counting taxes and salaries. Quote, "We have to be profitable," Miss de Bizet said. "Everyone's working all out to make sure we succeed." Well, it's a fake company. It doesn't exist, but she shows up every single day, as do dozens of other people in this office, at this company, to sell to other companies in France and Europe that actually don't exist. They take out fake loans from fake banks. They speak to loan officers at the banks, and this is in order to keep... It was originally designed to teach, like, students about running a bank, a company and an economy. But now it's replaced jobs. People don't have jobs, so they stay in this for months on end.
Well, it's part of the casino gulag, the economy that I describe many times. So, yeah, it's basically SimCity, or Second Life, which are virtual worlds. They created one in France to help people to kind of ease their way back into the workforce. What they discovered is that they don't need to ever enter the workforce. They can remain permanently in the Sim City, in this virtual reality game, where they believe they're calling clients, they believe they're making deals, but it's all virtual. Nothing's actually taking place, but it's part of the casino gulag. This is the future of all work for people going forward, is that they will be sitting behind computers playing essentially games. This will be added, I'm sure, at some point.
It's also this concept of fake it till you make it. So in Belfast, when we were there last year or the year before, we noticed that they had Potemkin shops in order to make an area look thriving. The industry, the high street, the local community had already disappeared. All the shops were no longer there because the Walmarts and the big chain shops were out of town or people didn't have jobs. So they put fake record stores, fake butcher shops.
Right, that was the beginning of the casino gulag, yeah. Is that that was still had a foot in virtual, in physical space.
Yeah.
You actually saw a physical representation of a record shop, even though it was fake.
Yeah, let me continue what I was saying. So you have this fake thing, so you're supposed to feel better and somehow create businesses. Here we have fake quantitative easing to mimic a real economy happening because people clearly don't have real jobs paying real wages. And here in this case in France, they have 100 Potemkin companies in France, thousands across Europe. Now, this particular woman that they highlight, they say, while she doesn't earn a paycheck, Ms. de Bizet, 41, welcomes the regular routine. She hopes Candelia will lead to a real job after countless searches and interviews that have gone nowhere. So it's kind of like a Kafkaesque sort of situation we're caught in, where all these people are working at fake jobs that will never lead to anything. Because
right,
there
and
is
behind
no
all
money.
The algorithms and the programs and the financing of these fake jobs and virtual realities, but computers and machines. So you ask yourself, why is Picasso going for $100 million? It's because the machines running the show realize that humans are soon to become extinct. So here you have a Pablo Picasso that he did back 60, 70, 80 years ago, and this is done by a human. They're extinct. So yes. In the machine world, that's quite valuable.
When there used to be real artists, now even our artists are mostly faking it until they make it to the Sotheby's auction and sold for $100 million, but they're not real artists like Pablo Picasso. Now, like I said, they have real companies all over France, all over Switzerland, all over these, and they actually have to make it very realistic. They have real stress at work, real deadlines. And the most fascinating quote comes in this paragraph from this article about these fake Potemkin companies in France. A realistic work environment helps everyone stay in character. The staff members have to run the companies like real businesses. At Candelia, Miss Derudre spent a week compiling a catalog of discounted furniture and a spring sales brochure to move inventory that hadn't been selling well. To do so, she studied real market prices. Quote, "It might be fake," she said with a laugh, "but we've got to make up for losses." Now, let's compare that to the banking system and our economies. The banking systems, they're fake derivatives, but real losses to our global economy. We have fake economic policies of quantitative easing, but real losses for our jobs and our wages and our wealth.
In the case of the French people, it's very easy to recreate a French culture by introducing fake anxiety for these fake employees.
And they go on fake strikes, actually.
And they have manifestation.
Fake boss nappings.
Fake boss napping. So this is, again, you become what you fear. And humans fear that the universe is nothing but a hologram that's being projected from some unknown source. And so because we fear this, we've made ourselves into that hologram that we fear. This person's living a life of a hologram, living in a museum, living in a virtual reality, to pretend as though they have some cultural affiliation to something that gives their lives meaning. Even though, because, as you point out, because of quantitative easing, because of the issuance of fake money, and because of the destruction of all human contact and the replacement thereof by virtual social interaction and social media, people have lost track. As you say at the beginning of the show, it would be one thing if we were faking it till we make it, but here we're at a point where we don't even know what it constitutes making it anymore, because we've completely lost touch with what it is to be in human. The human experience has become extinct, and now the physical corpus representation of us as humans is now going the way of all flesh, and the machines have finally completely frickin' taken over. We gotta go.
Well, Max, that sounds like 1984 come to fruition. What do you think about that? This is a mad world, but we'll take care of it. I got 6 guys we'll go down and demonstrate in Phoenix. Be back with you tomorrow, Saturn's Day. 14-5, man.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean. Now you wear your skin like iron, and your breath is hard as kerosene. Weren't your mama's only boy, but her favorite one it seemed. She began to cry when you said goodbye. Sank to your grief. Poncho was a bandit boy, his horse was fast as tall as steel. He wore his gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Poncho met his match, you know, on the deserts down in Mexico. Nobody heard his dying.
He only did what he had to.